Today we have for the seminar Maureen, who is a wider researcher, but not resident in Helsinki, but in Dar es Salaam. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Carlos. So, good afternoon, everyone. Where I come from, when you people say good afternoon, you should respond.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, but yeah. You don't greet people. When you greet people, they should greet you back. And then you don't start to do something without the greetings. So that's part of the cultural training background we have. So anyway, that's just like to start us off. So this work and this paper is a joint effort between Peter Wawalwa, who works at the Central Bank of Kenya. I've just had at the back of the room there are people who know him. He's just finished his PhD at UCT, and I think graduated 1 year ago. So it's some work that we had started with him before he went for his PhD, but then both of us kind of got so engaged with the other things. So when he came back from the PhD with a fresh mind, and we revisited the paper and we said, okay, let's now have it at least cleared, and by then now we also had some new ideas on what to do and what not to do. So we have some, I'll just take you through, I've been given I think how many minutes, but I'll try to take less time than what I have been given. So the paper is basically, the title of the paper is Export-Led Growth and Mirage, the Case of Kenya. And by way of introduction, so we all know about the role of exports as a strategy for revamping growth, and there has been a lot of literature about this export-led growth, especially starting in the early 1990s with this the East Asian miracle, when we saw like a lot of economies in the Eastern Asia kind of taking off in a very radical way based on this strategy of export promotion, export orientation. And so the whole issue of using this outward-oriented trade strategy as a growth strategy that could help revamp countries to a higher growth path. And like many of the African countries, during the early 1990s, Kenya embraced trade openness. There was a lot of efforts towards trade liberalization. This is the time when we also saw a lot of transition from the structural adjustment programs by the IMF and World Bank, and some of the conditionalities were basically to liberalize the economies, remove all these tariffs on trade and all that. And Kenya was one of the actually countries that really went out of its way to liberalize trade, and most of these policies were really like all that most of the significant tariff reductions were witnessed in the early 1990s. So there was kind of a transition from import substitution, export promotion, and then like trade liberalization starting in the early 1990s. And then the country has what we call the Vision 2030, and this is like the country's development blueprint, and the vision is to become a globally competitive, prosperous, newly industrializing country by 2030. Sometimes when the countries come up with this vision, 2030 looks like so far. So I've been asking myself, like, we are already in 2019. So we are actually talking about 10 years. And basically, the question is whether we'll, 10, 11 years, whether we'll really, from where we stand right now, whether Kenya will really be a country that qualifies now to be a newly industrializing or newly industrialized country. But the main underpinning for this is to like rely on the, this export-led strategy to take us to Canaan, or to take the country to Canaan as one of the strategies. However, when you look at on the ground, what you see is there haven't been this kind of, despite all this, like drastic or the significant export response, notwithstanding all the efforts. And then we have seen like trade deficit worsening and over time. And so what this paper does is just to try and explore the export growth nexus in the context of Kenya. So as I think I have already mentioned in that introduction, we like the country has moved over time from the import substitution in the early 1960s and 70s. Then there was effort towards export promotion policies, like providing tax incentives, export processing zones, and all that, creating all that. And then this extensive trade liberalization starting in the early 1990s. And then, of course, there have been also the currently there is a lot of effort on the regional integration initiatives. So Kenya is one of the member countries for East African Community and also a member of COMESA. Now looking at just to explore like, so what's the composition of exports? And then when you just like, this just like a plot of yeah, is it on
really?
At the
site
or something?
No, it's
working, okay. So in this is just like a graph of like the key exports over time. And if you look, the main commodity export here is tea, so followed by horticulture and coffee used to be a kind of, it has fallen out over time, and it's no longer like a very one of the key export commodities. So basically what you're talking about is as a country, the country is heavily dependent on primary agricultural exports. So tea, horticulture, these have been like the main export earners. This is just for goods. If you were to consider for services as well, then you bringing issues of maybe a bit of tourism earnings. And then here we're just trying to say like Singapore at the moment is one of the countries that is ranks top in terms of exports, is a key according to the World Trade Organization latest data. Singapore ranks very high on top in terms of countries that have a higher export share or significant. So we just like thought, like if you look at some of these countries like Singapore, Malaysia, and over time, the agricultural, the share of, so in the early 1980s, you can see that agricultural raw material exports as a share of total merchandise exports for Singapore or for a country like Malaysia was very high. But you can see that these countries over time, they have reduced their share of agricultural raw materials as a percentage of merchandise exports. But if you look like countries like, I put Ghana here, so what is there?
Here.
Maybe you're better off than Kenya, I'm not sure. But I think we are more or less, Kenya and Ghana always tend to be moving in the same direction. And then here we just like try to look at their contribution to real GDP. So this is really like from the expenditure side. And when you look at from the expenditure side, the key drivers of growth has just been private consumption. So you can see that the net exports is actually in the negative.
Jesus Christ, have mercy.
Try, just keep trying.
Anyway, you can see that the net exports are in the negative domain. So what this discard of course means is these are net exports. So the net exports are basically negative. So you are exporting more than you are. So your contribution to GDP growth is actually negative. So this is just like just to tease out some of the information from the data. And so I'll not dwell so much on the literature. I think much of the literature around export growth nexus is mainly in the context of the indigenous growth models, as we know. And basically that also forms the basis of the theoretical framework. So the whole essence that decides labor, capital, the role of exporting, augmenting the aggregate production function. So you have like spillover effects from exporting, their productivity effects for exporting, and so really the main underpinning framework is the endogenous growth models. And then we move on to the empirical model, and we simply do a simple specification with these variables. Mainly like our interest, of course, being exports. And what we try to do is, in the context of import-dependent economies, when you look at the role of exports, you cannot ignore the role of imports, because again, even for you to be able to export, you really like you are relying on imports in the sense that you have to import intermediate goods and also you have to import capital goods. And so we felt like I think it is important that you also consider just to analyze how the import lies into this equation. In terms of methodology, what we do is we use a vector error correction model to do this because of being amenable to the time series and also knowing that there are issues of this being time series data, there are non-stationary issues, and then there's also endogeneity issues between exports and growth, and just try to use the vacuum. And so we use just the standard setup of the vacuum, which should be familiar to most of us. So I'll just quickly move to the main results, the summary of the empirical results. So we have like quite a number of regressions, and I thought like perhaps I'll just summarize the key main results instead of like bombarding you with so many of these equations. And just before I mention this, what we've done is, I think just for robustness, to instead of just doing like the aggregate production or function, I mean the equation, we also went further and tried to do like the sectoral level. So the results are at two levels. So you have like the vacuum at the national aggregate level, and then you have these sub-vacuums under the three the sectoral levels: agriculture, manufacturing, and services. Just to see whether the dynamics change, or if there could be more interesting information that may be concealed by this aggregate analysis. First we established that there is a long-run relationship between output, exports, and imports, and also more importantly, there is a significant role of real exchange rate, both on outputs and exports, and we try to interpret the real exchange rate as an indicator of productivity and also competitiveness. And then by the virtue of using a VECM, it gives you flexibility to combine both the long run and short run dynamics. And what we find is a higher speed of adjustment, so deviations from the long run deviations are much faster or higher speed of adjustment in the case of imports than in the case of output and exports. And I think this can be explained because, again, given the kind of this nature of economy, it's easier for imports to respond than it is for exports because of constraints or capacity of the economy for example, due to supply side constraints. But to import is much faster, so you can always adjust faster. And then we also find a positive impact of imports on exports. And again, this is also kind of can be explained in the sense that, in fact, for you to have a significant export supply response, you need some kind of key inputs, which most of which have to be imported. So the kinds of the imported capital wood and intermediate goods. So you have there's some kind of complementarity between exporting and importing in this context. However, what we find, especially at the aggregate level, this is for at the aggregate level, exporting doesn't seem to have statistically significant role in terms of revamping growth. So, although that may change as I go to the sectoral analysis. Then I think I've also mentioned about the role of the real exchange rate and also the fact that real exchange rate and imports account for most of the fluctuations in output in the short run. And then, as would expect, there's that expected impact, statistically significant impact of fixed capital formation for exports. Then, we thought that perhaps that may conceal more the dynamics given if you just do this kind of analysis at the aggregate level. So we decided to go a little bit lower and then try to do the analysis at the sectoral level. So while we just look at, what are the outcomes when you look at it from agriculture, manufacturing, and then services. So in the case of agriculture, this will be agricultural output, which would be the main interest. So again, we find that there are all these long-run relationships. And then we find a significant role of exports and also, again, a real exchange rate in explaining agricultural output growth. And also we find exports doesn't seem to have any statistically significant impact on agricultural output. Then in the case of the manufacturing sector output, again, we find imports still stand out. And then here we find that manufacturing output also influences exports in a way that is which is higher, so the impact is more higher than in the case of imports. And then we move on to do the service output. And you find, again, imports are very critical in terms of services output and also gross fixed capital formation. And then we didn't stop there, so we went further and said, okay, what if we disaggregate exports? Do the dynamics change? So instead of just like looking at just aggregate exports, what about if you do a disaggregated analysis by disaggregating exports? So we disaggregate exports again into categories, and the one that we found more interesting and perhaps which we have also spent a little more time explaining in the paper is when you look at the role of manufactured exports. So although if you look at the aggregate analysis, there doesn't seem to be a significant impact of exporting on output, but when you disaggregate, you find that manufactured exports do impact on output growth. So this would be the case of why maybe this is where we have value addition and multiply effects, and so you expect that this really makes sense. And then we also found that import of machinery is actually the one that has a significant impact on output and also export. So these are like just a summary because of what we find from all these analyses, because there are quite a number of regressions given that we are also looking at the sectoral dynamics. And in terms of like what is the way of conclusion, basically we are simply saying that exports are biased towards, we still have like a heavy bias towards primary agricultural goods, tea, horticulture. They are still like the main key drivers of exports, and also the dependence on imports. The impact of exporting in revamping growth is still limited, and this perhaps can be explained by the fact that the reliance on primary products with little multiply effects and little value addition. However, when we do the sectoral analysis, as I've already pointed out, manufactured exports have higher potential in driving the economy to a higher growth path. And of course, we also, as would expect, we find the implications of real exchange rates that has in driving export competitiveness, as would expect. So basically, to sum it up, what we are saying is that there's need to revamp export-led growth. So there is potential for growth for export to really like revamp the country or to take it to a higher growth path. But what is going to be of value is not just like just exporting for the sake of it, but where we at least empirically find evidence for this is the role for manufactured exports, and which would point to the fact that there is need for more value addition and tapping into global value chains that then would enhance the export orientation and then get this much desired export-led growth. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we have time for questions. Don't go there. No, but can you stay here?
My notebook.
Ah, okay.
I love to write, so that I will facilitate. I need something. Okay, ask.
So, goodness.
Okay, thanks, Maureen, for the presentation. I think I have a couple of questions, but I will limit it to three. Yeah, first, I would like to know How many co-integrating vectors did you find, and how did you do the normalization? Because that has an implication in your the way you interpret the result. And then, when you say export is not did not have significant impact on growth, you didn't tell us whether is it significant long run or is it short run, or is it for both? So I didn't see you distinguishing between the long run and short run results. Then finally, when you were doing the sectoral analysis, I don't know if you also try to use sector specific endogenous variables as side output, like your labor, your capital. At some point you mentioned you disaggregated export, but for this other two, or did you use the aggregate labor and capital?
Okay. Maybe a big set and then.
Thank you. I'm just curious on that. How long your observation? I didn't catch up probably you presented. If it is maybe like 20 years, how long was your data? And if that's the case, I was thinking like, I know Kenya is the biggest economy in East Africa, and it has a big influence in all consumption in our countries in East Africa. And I found it kind of strange that to find that this their export is not so influential. But I was suggesting if you could have this data in terms of panel, if you can look at least what they can be exporting or importing in these East African countries or even outside, then maybe you can have a big story to tell to look at how the export and import Kenya does with the other countries. Then you can do maybe some kind of gravity model to make life easier and you find more story probably. That's what I was thinking.
Thank you for a nice presentation and also very nice topic. Just I'm wondering about the methodology, PCM, vector error correction model. So I think this model does not control the structural break or structural transformation. And as you mentioned, Kenya has suffered from many structural transformation in terms of policy change from import substitution to export promotion. So in my view, I think the autoregressive distributed lag maybe is suitable in your case rather than PCM, vector error correction model. The another question or another observation about the issue of export promotion strategy in Africa in general, which is not successful strategy compared to Asia, for example. Asian countries like China, maybe Singapore, Malaysia, these countries have gained a lot from structural, from export, lead growth or export promotion. Why this is not the case in Africa? Because due to problem of agricultural primary or primary export, or maybe institutional problem, maybe governance. So also this issue, I think, need serious attention or serious research in order to explore the reason behind unsuccessful of this policy.
Okay, maybe you can.
Okay, so.
If you allow me just a second, regarding this last question, there was a lecture by Joseph Stiglitz during the conference in September, and so how his view was quite pessimistic in terms of how to bring the model that worked in Southeast Asia to African countries. There is a working paper, so I encourage you to read it. A wider working paper about how feasible it is to translate the growth model from Asian countries to African countries.
You say it's a wider working paper?
Yeah, it's a wider working paper. So, Maureen?
Okay, thanks. Yeah, so these are very interesting comments. I'll start with the witness. We had three co-iterating vectors. Normalization, so you can normalize by output, exports, and imports. That's how we normalized them. And then distinguish the distinction between long-run and short-run results. So of more interest to us is the long-run, but in the short-run, okay, there's some kind of positive impact in the short-run, which is not highly statistically significant, but in the long-run, we don't see much of that. Sectoral growth, yes, yeah. We tried where possible, but we realized that when you go to sectoral, especially getting specific variables, specific sectoral variables for certain variables, for example, gross fixed capital formation, we could not be able to have specific for service, industry, and agriculture. So we don't have like this kind of high sectoral disaggregated data on some of those variables. So that becomes a challenge. So we just use them during the year. And then, yeah, the data sets, this is a long, okay, not so long. You know, in time series, one would wish to have a very long time series data, especially if you're using this kind of models like Bekken. We have over 30 years observation. And then the issue of panel data, actually this is my thought that perhaps you are very right. After doing this kind of study, one would want to do like maybe just looking at case of Kenya. But given that even in the interest of regional integration, maybe to do like panel data for countries, and then you can get very interesting dynamics. So we are thinking about that as our next step. And structural break. Yeah, this you can do also empirically. You can test for structural break, but we didn't do that. ADR distributed lab model, which we considered that, but we found the Bekken to have more interesting results, and so we actually decided to use the Bekken. This is issue of export promotion and why it has not worked in the case of African countries, like it has worked for Asian countries. I think it's an issue that is now attracting a lot of debate also, as Carlos has pointed out. And perhaps there is even the broader thinking that African countries need to think outside the box. So just because maybe it's worked for the Asian countries, I mean, you cannot really lift it exactly the way it is, because also their dynamics have changed and we are not, but it is a question that for this kind of study, which is more or less to aggregate, you may not, because there are many dynamics. For example, we have had these issues of export promotion zones. And part of the incentives, there are a number of incentives to the export, like tax holiday for 10 years, you don't pay the, so that. But then we found that still, even then, you don't see this kind of export response out of this export promotion and export processing zones as you expect. And so there are quite a number of reasons that one can go into, which may not necessarily be more of actually qualitative, or even you could analyze. So yes, it is an issue. And maybe in this study, what we try to do is just to try and explain the results, or what would be explaining some of these results that we are seeing. But maybe we may not be able to really dig deeper, because then this is more, and even in the context in which you have asked that question, it's more of a generic challenge. And we are now talking, having these debates. Like, if you, I've listened to Stiglitz's lecture about the whole issue of how these African, the East Asian models may not necessarily work in the context of over the African countries. So, yeah. Any other questions?
Other words on
Yeah, one, thanks for the presentation. I have two comments. One is that, you know, horticulture is influencing primary products. Yes or no? Because horticulture in Kenya is a success story, right? I mean, and it doesn't have the same property as other primary products like, say, coffee or whatever else. So horticulture has some sort of static spillover things, which is somewhat similar to manufacturing. So if it is in prime products, then maybe it's a miscategorization. Maybe we want to try and see if it can classified in a different, or maybe you can disaggregate data on horticulture exports. So that's the first comment. Second comment is that actually Kenyans are very well in ready-made garments from the export processing zones more recently. In fact, after Lesotho probably is the success story in that area in sub-Saharan Africa, at least in East Africa. And so again, I think maybe the data is not picking up that fact that there's been a big growth in ready-made garment exports and linked to value chains actually. A lot of Chinese investment and so on that has come into the explosives zone. So I wonder whether that recent the data doesn't actually include that period, and whether you could find it's different with the time series data, but to think a little bit more carefully about this more recent period where garments is playing a different role. There was a period when garments was not very important in Kenyan exports.
We have time.
So, Maureen, I wondered, you got the real exchange rate in there. I wondered if
we have a real exchange rate.
Yeah, if the real exchange rate had been a major issue for Kenya, you know, I mean, does the central bank target it at all? Then secondly, a sort of broader question, which is, you know, there's been quite a bit of talk over the years, recent years, about you know, service exports by Kenya. This thing, the what does it call it? The Silicon Savannah. So you know, you're getting into the IT sector, earning foreign exchange that way. And if you had any thoughts on that?
Sam?
Yeah, I was just curious, and it would be helpful perhaps just to see the specification that you used, because I wasn't quite sure of which variables were going and where, but I'm also curious to understand, I mean, if you're looking at the relationship between output, exports, and imports, you clearly have the problem that you're dealing with an accounting identity to a certain extent. So I'm interested to hear about how you're dealing with that, and whether you're just picking up something from an accounting identity or something, you're trying to interpret these as genuine causal relationships, and I'm struggling to understand that precisely.
Okay, so let me start with Sam's question. I'm going in reverse. Yeah, so actually the reason why we ended up like settling for Wekem is because like that we would not be able to pick up this endogeneity problem. So we could share the paper at some point. Central Bank doesn't target the exchange rate, so it's I wouldn't say freely floating, but managed float in the sense that they manage the volatility, but it is determined by the demand and supply. Silicon Valley, okay, yeah, there has been this issue of services exports and this Silicon Savannah story, but again, okay, when you look at the recent period, there's some kind of, there's something going in there, but not really, again, to a very significant impact as one would expect for an economy like Kenya, I mean, which, as has been pointed out, is one of the strong economies in the region and supposed to be, like, leading the way. Horticulture, okay. This has been a success story, but there has also been challenges, and I don't know, export of flowers especially has been, and vegetables. But other than trying to meet the standards, and that's where at least efforts have been made to meet the international research standards, there isn't processing that goes into it. So I don't know whether really that wouldn't qualify as primary or manufactured. And then there have also been challenges in terms of sometimes meeting the required standards. You know the horticulture is a very delicate kind of industry, because there are all those sometimes the thresholds that are required in the international markets. Kenya has really tried. In fact, now some of the competition has been coming from countries like Ethiopia, which are actually now also like aggressively tapping into horticulture. So maintaining those standards sometimes is a challenge, and also there are issues of these countries, especially they also look into, you know, the use of chemicals and what levels of chemicals or what are you not using and all that. Yeah, so the fact that this is one area where the country was able to break through in terms of, let's say, call it export diversification away from, actually, I would say, like, horticulture kind of seemed to have replaced the poor performance of coffee, so there was some breakthrough. But I think going forward, also trying to maintain that, and now at least diversifying even within that, doesn't seem to have like changed as much after the breakthrough into the market. And also then there's also this issue of ever this strict international standards that have to be observed sometimes being a challenge. And then the export supply response. There was some time, for example, where there is this high market demand for avocados, but then even to be able to meet that demand has been a challenge. So there's a time we had run out of avocados because, you know, I mean, the government was almost declaring like a temporary ban on export of avocados because we can't get avocados in the local markets because the supply is limited. So the potential even to meet that demand, I think there's still potential, but it's still not reaching there. But then there are areas where clearly the opportunities that can still be exploited. Yeah, so there are all those dynamics. EPZ, export processing zones. When you look at the incentives, and in fact what one of the criticisms of this is that we look at the incentives like the tax holidays that are being given and what we would expect, and there are those people actually are feeling that perhaps these tax incentives, the revenue that is being missed is not commensurate to what the outcomes are. And then also there's also this issue of sometimes these incentives are supposed to be given so that you revamp the export from the export processing zone. But what happens is that they're exporting just, they're actually selling in the domestic market. So there have been also those challenges. There are quite a number of intricacies there. And then also on the side of the producers or the people who are in this industry, they also have their own side of story. And when it comes to provision of utilities, basic access to basic utilities is a challenge. Then there's all issue of In fact, the area where at least some effort has been, like what I would say success story, was the textile through the AGOA initiative. But then even there we have had challenges with the for example access to raw materials like cotton and all that, which has also constrained to in a way the response that one would expect. So there are some pockets of success stories, but when you look at the global picture, they kind of fizzles out. But yes, there are some specific areas where there are clear success stories that one can actually pick out. Yeah.
Questions?
Given some concerns about the non-significant effect of export on Kenya's output, would you perhaps maybe consider doing a robustness check to see if there are issues of non-linearities? Perhaps a non-linear model can confirm your results. You didn't show us the trend of export and output, but I think even looking at the trend, you should be able to have some idea of whether the relationship is actually linear.
Okay, I didn't put the chart, but we have a chart on just the trend on export and output growth. It doesn't look linear.
Then try a non-linear. And see whether you get the same conclusion.
It doesn't look non-linear.
Oh, it doesn't look non-linear.
Yeah.
It looks more like... But you can still test for that. You can still test and be sure.
But
so that your conclusion is, I mean...
Robust.
Yeah.
But as people who have studied this kind of... Would we be surprised by this kind of result? And by the way, that's what drove us to the sectoral analysis.
Yeah.
Because we were like, okay, could it be that perhaps the type of export matters? So, and for me, the fact that we can actually see this clear link, because at least we've also tried to do some, like, quite a number of just some checks to see if you do this and whether the specification is stable and all that. And clearly what we find is that when you talk about manufactured exports, there seem to be a consistent impact and relationship between exporting and growth and output growth. And for me, that really makes sense. And maybe it can even be explained, because I think it is here where you have more multiplier effects. So in that sense, where one would expect them to find this. So it's not like, because that's why sometimes just doing this aggregate analysis, you miss the story. So it's not like it is not there. But then you have to, when you look at type of export, or if you look at it by sectors, then you start to find more interesting dynamics. It's also a bit limiting that we could not be able to find like sector-specific variables, because that would also have been more interesting to do. Like to find, for example, just growth is capital formation, just maybe for agriculture, for services, just to have like some of those sector specific, or bring in some sector specific dynamics, variables, which we have not done, because then we are trying to kind of stick to the same variables. And perhaps that would even bring out more dynamics in the analysis. Yeah. Yes, please.
So I'm not familiar with growth models, but I'm interested in hearing your sort of narrative the stories behind, like, how would export, like, you know, affect on or does not affect growth, output growth. For example, like, past export induced people to invest more so that, like, output grows more. Like, what is the narrative behind the regression that you run?
So the whole narrative about this endogenous growth models is we will have, like, your standard production function where you're just talking about capital and labor.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you open up, there are a host of things that happen. Then you can improve your productivity because then, and then there's also, like, learning through exporting. So the local farms, for example, the technological spillover effects to the domestic economy, and through the domestic, these technological spillovers, you improve the productivity. You are able to kind of tap the most the modern technologies and then adopt them to the economy and then enhance your productivity. And then as you enhance your productivity, then your output goes up. So there's a whole, like, you know.
Yeah, so farmers would basically invest more in technology to improve their productivity. Is that the story?
Yes.
So how long is considered long run here? Because, like, it seems like I don't know how long it would take for, you know, like, say they see a surge in export and then they invest immediately, or, you know, it take like 5 years or 10 years, like, sort of hard to.
Is there some Michael would like to help me answer how long this long run? You know, economists always talk about long run. So
yeah, I mean,
in your model, like, how would you? Like, I'm just curious, like, how you model that? Yeah, like, how you model long run?
So in this kind of what happens is so how do I explain this? Yeah, so it gives you a chance to look at the long run dynamics, like, from the way we know, because when you formulate these theoretical models or from theoretical, most of the assumptions that you are coming up are, of course, based on the long run relationships. So in the short term, things can move up and down, but then in the long run, you expect, like, some kind of more established relationship between variables, or more established relationships. So the Beckham will allow you to kind of analyze both the dynamics, and in the short run you are looking at deviations in the short run from, for example, changes in output versus changes in exporting, and what kind of relationship you get. So I think I can just try to explain it generally like that, I don't know, because this is just like the way most of economic analysis.
Well, I mean, like, so at the micro level, when you run a regression, you want to estimate, like, the long-term effects of something you interact with. You sort of, like, draw up the middle observation, for example, and then you see, like, the effect from, like, the original point, and then, you know, like, some later points, or you can look at, like, interact that with, like, changes in different years, and then see how. So I don't know. So basically, it's just my ignorance in terms of, like,
it's
how
okay.
You
it's
look
it's
at long term
okay.
trends. So
we are all ignorant at some time, I think. Learning
this, this is time series.
Right, so,
yeah.
So this is time series.
Actually, it has nothing to do with whether it's 1 or 2 years.
Yes.
Actually, explain. It depends on the dynamics of the your economy or the variables, whether, you know, everything is fixed or some factors are fixed and some are not fixed. But I don't think it doesn't have to do with short run is 1 to 3 years, long run is
not in that perspective. Thank you, goodness.
But John Maynard Keynes says, I think it's John, in the long run.
We are all dead.
Yeah, we are all dead.
For sure.
How do you know?
Because we are all dead.
Yeah,
no one knows.
Most serious, the problem. Sorry, the problem here, you know, is that you can't estimate the regression with TFP and factor correlation separately. I mean, what you're really asking is to have a regression where you can estimate TFP if you growth is a two, can be two things: TFP growth or factor correlation. Right? Because the problem is you can't really estimate that on stock in any meaningful way at the national level, and so you can't really have a reliable estimate of TFP. Because if you could do that, then you could have a sense of whether exports are affecting TFP growth or factor correlation growth, and then you have a clearer sense of the mechanisms of what's happening. But since at the aggregate level, it's very difficult to estimate capital stock, and that's why firm level data is much better for this kind of work in that sense, right? But you know, this is a challenge with working with macro data. But the mechanisms are not very clear in this kind of work.
So, any more questions? Okay, so thank you very much.
Thank you, these were very useful comments.